On this episode of My Adventure in Space and Time.
And then, we hear the Daleks talk about something.
No, I'm not even going to resist this tangent. I want to go on.
Don't apologize. Right.
And welcome to My Adventure in Space and Time, a modern Whovian's journey through classic Who. I'm Shona, I'm that Whovian, and I'm here again with my favourite small episode person, Chloe Huberdeau. Hello!
Hi! It's me!
So the minute I saw this on the list of, picture this, right? I'm working my way through the Doctor Who episodes, and this one kind of threw me because it's just one episode long, which none of them are. But my first thought was, oh, great, I'll get Chloe on to do it because we did Edge of Destruction, which is two episodes, and we did The Rescue, which is two episodes. Sandy, R.I.P. Sandy was the background of my phone until very recently. But I left my... Yeah, like ever since we covered that episode ages ago. But I left that phone in a taxi over Christmas, so... R.I.P. Sandy again.
All right, again. One was already enough.
Yeah. I can't remember what happened to him. I think they shot him.
One of the people shot him and they didn't know. I think one of them knew that he wasn't bad and the other one... Anyways.
So this is kind of a prequel to a story, the Dalek Master Plan. Yeah, and it's an isolated episode, so there's no Doctor, there's no companions. At the end of Galaxy 4, the one I just did, they're in the TARDIS at the end, and I can't really remember. The Doctor says something like, oh, who knows what's down on that planet? And then they look out the window, and then it zooms in on this planet, and then it's the opening scene. And what we watched, I guess for the benefit of the listener, is the version that was recreated by the University of Lancashire in 2019, which was really recent. So this was like a project by the staff and the students and some of the graduates as well, where they recreated this missing episode just based on what information they had from either people that had originally been involved with it, the script and the audio and stills, of course. And I just thought that sounded like the coolest, weirdest little thing. And I thought we would have fun talking about it.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Are all the music cues the original music cues?
I presumed so, but then I don't know. Did they re-record it? They didn't. Now, I watched a behind the scenes video. Like, it was like 10 minutes long that YouTube suggested to me afterwards. And they didn't say anything about the music. So I think it must be. The music must be the same. But then it doesn't sound very old.
Yeah, it sounds like more crisp. I don't know.
So maybe they did re-record it. Hey, that's something I could find out in hindsight. Or if anyone that knows wants to tweet me, that would be helpful. I didn't even think of that for a second. Though something I did question throughout was, is this bad or are they just really committed to 60s production values? And that's something I feel like I'm going to ask a few times.
I think it's the second one. I thought it was really good. I was wondering how different it would feel from just like one of the old episodes. I also haven't watched that many of the old episodes, but it pretty much the only like real difference were like some things seemed a little bit more crisp and the faces. It's difficult to recreate the sort of waxiness that people... from like old TV and movies, like how they look, like their faces just, it has to be like difference in just what the makeup is and how they're doing the makeup. Because they looked like they had skin a little bit more.
Yeah, I know what you mean. There were so many things where I was like, it looks different, but why? Is it just that the way that people put themselves together looks a bit more modern, and it's kind of hard to pinpoint the subtleties of that, like things like their haircuts and stuff? Like, is that just a really tiny thing that makes it more modern? I gotta say, when it started and you could just see it so well, like it did look like it was made in the 60s. Like, there were times I forgot.
Yeah,
but just that open, just right at the start, you could just see it so beautifully. And I find that, like, I had kind of forgotten that normally when I'm watching these old episodes, you're just squinting, you know, it's so blurry and so, yeah, it's so grainy. And it was just like, ah, this is such a relief.
I was wondering, did they film it with the same camera and on film that they would have done in the 60s?
I wonder. Because, like, how committed is... Something that they kept saying was with 60s production values. But I don't know how far that goes. You know, does that just mean we're going to use... We're doing it on a small budget, and we're going to do it with this kind of set, and we're going to do it with this stuff that's available to us? Or does that mean literally the same kind of film?
I don't... I'm not a filmmaking... I don't know about cameras and stuff, but just from it looked and, like, how it was shot, I was assuming that they used a similar camera. I would assume that they used film, but maybe not. I don't know. It's hard to say. The other thing was, like, so I turned on the captions, but they weren't accurate. So I usually always turn on the captions, and I also usually would watch it, like, on my computer with my headphones in, but I watched this one on my TV. So without captions, there was a lot of points where I couldn't fully understand them. And the friend that I watched it with and I were talking afterwards about whether that was more to do with, like, the accuracy of the sound recording, but also the fact that even though they're trying to do their best 60s TV accents, I guess they're not used to talking that clearly, because there's a certain, like, technique that people had to use in order to be understood. And I wasn't sure, because I can't understand things, like, a lot of the time without subtitles. Because I was like, oh, I thought they did, like, the accents were, like, really great, but... because then they also brought up that the Daleks, like, you can understand them all the time because their whole thing is talking clearly and slowly and yelling.
Though this, I did have a moment with the Daleks when I first heard the Daleks. I was like, so by this point, I'd kind of forgotten that what I was watching was a recreation, a current recreation, you know. And so I heard the Dalek's voices, and I was literally writing down. I was like, wow, these Dalek voices have really improved since the last time. Because I remember the last time I'd seen them was an episode, a story, The Chase. And we made fun of their voices so much because some of them had, like, there was one that was like this real, like, Cockney geezer Dalek. You know, he was like, exterminate. And it was just so silly.
There was one like that in this one. It was like it was more geezery, and I burst out laughing because I didn't realize that Daleks could have different dialects.
Well, I wonder if this is something. So they had Nicholas Briggs on it, who does who's the current Dalek guy. You know, like, he's the Dalek voice expert, and he's on all the Modern Who stuff. I wonder if he did that on purpose to maybe try and give it more of an oldie feel, you know. It was like, oh yeah, back way back when the Daleks did have slightly different kind of voices. But I did sort of forget at first. I was like, oh, these Dalek voices are really good quality. And I was like, wait, it's Nicholas Briggs, like, he's the one doing them now, like.
Oh, I had assumed that, like, they were different actors doing the different Daleks. I need to go back and watch some Daleks from the 60s. It sounds like it's a fun time.
Oh my God. Yeah. Right. Dalek stories. So you've got the Dalek, right. The Daleks is the second story that exists in Doctor Who. But honestly, that's, like, a pretty good story. And it's the first, it's like introduction to the Daleks. It's pretty crazy. But then I guess it must be series two, you've got the Dalek invasion of Earth. So I don't know if you remember in this one, they were like, the Daleks invaded Earth 1,000 years ago. Mm-hmm. Well, the Dalek invasion of Earth's great. That one's really, like, it's weirdly dystopian for this kind of era of Doctor Who. It's not what I expected. It's the one that's got that big poster in it that says it is forbidden to throw bodies in the river. It's proper creepy and cool.
Okay,
Yeah, it's a pretty good story. And Susan leaves at the end of that story. And there's like quite a nice moment with William Hartnell as well. Yeah, would recommend. But also the chase is just fucking crazy. There's a bit where they're in a haunted house. There's a bit where, it's so crazy. I think you would really like it. It's just so mental. There's a bit where they're on a famous ship. I can't remember what it's called. There's one where they go really into the future. And there's this crazy battle between two big robots. It's just mental. Bananas. But yeah, I also thought their voices were really good. Like their accents. Like I thought they really got that kind of RP television voice for most of it. But maybe you're right. I also really prefer subtitles, but I've been watching a lot of the missing episodes. So I usually have to find them online, and they're just stills and audio, and I don't usually have the option of them at the moment. So maybe I've gotten a bit more used to it because I didn't find it too bad. But it's maybe a luxury of being a TV or film actor is that you don't really need to speak clearly in order to be understood or heard. Like you can mumble away. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Well, especially like now with the way like microphones are, there's a Vice video about this, about why you can't understand anything anybody's saying in contemporary stuff.
Yeah. And it's also really dark.
Oh, I hate that. Disney Plus, everything is so dark. You have to turn it all the way up. I'm confident in stating that as a person who's watched 100 hours of Loki. So
that seems like the kind of thing they would like really dark. Yeah. Like,
yes.
It started with Game of Thrones, I think, and just escalated from there. Yeah. Cool. I guess I'm going to go through this plot bit by bit and we can just say thoughts we have as and when. So
shoot the shit.
I can't shoot this shit. So we've got Jeff. He wakes up on a planet called Campbell. I love this opening. I think it's so good. He wakes up and he's just like, kill, kill. Like, it's like a pretty amazing, iconic start, I think.
I think he says, I remember now.
Yes, something. He does.
They never really return to that.
Yeah, what does he mean?
I don't know if he gets... knocked out. Yeah, that was interesting and ominous.
Yeah, like I remember I want to kill. I thought like he had just been, you know, this is a new thought.
Yeah.
What do you mean, Jeff? Maybe Jeff was just specifically always a psychopath.
Yeah, it was the beard for me that sent me off, you know, I immediately didn't trust him.
Also, speaking of things that kind of modernized it, that just to me looked like a modern looking beard.
It looked like a very modern beard. I was like, did he just not want to shave his beard?
Yeah, but why did it look modern? This is the thing that I can't understand with myself, you know? Well, I'm like,
have you seen other beards in other early Who?
Actually, there's a good point. A little bit, but
is it almost always like a man 50 and up? I feel like you didn't see a lot of beards in young men in that era.
I feel like you're right. Yeah. And beards are more of a thing now. Like, I remember, hey, I'm not saying this is when this happened, but in 2009, when I was in my first year of university on a course that I did not finish, this was like a music course. So like, every male music student went home for summer clean shaven, and when they came back, every single one of them had a beard, and it felt like everyone in my life suddenly had a beard. And I feel like that's when beards got trendy again. But maybe it's just the age I was at, because that would have been like early 20s, so I don't know if it's an age thing or
that was like the peak of like mustache and beard culture. I think
that's
where you get a mustache tattooed on your finger.
Oh,
so then you
that
can
was a
put it under your nose.
That wasn't something I engaged in, but I think it was people my age, and I have to accept that.
Yeah. It was around. Yeah, beards are one of those things that I haven't reconciled, you know?
I just didn't know how you were going to finish that sentence. Like, you haven't experienced, you haven't accepted, like, what?
I think because I'm not a person who can grow a beard, it still feels so foreign to me, and I haven't had a lot of, like, intimate experience with a beard, and I don't really, in most cases, I don't like a beard, but the fact that there's people who can grow hair, who just naturally have hair coming out of their face. And I mean, imagine how it sounds like a real fuck off task to have to shave all the time, but also the alternative is having a beard. This is all very personal to me.
No, let's unpack this. I shaved a guy's face once. He let me shave his face. And, you know, I was someone that had been shaving my own hair for like a good while. And I just did not know it would feel like that.
It's not the same.
It's not in any way the same. And I think if I'd thought about it, isn't a word. And I think if I'd thought about that for more than 3 seconds, you know, I would have realized that. I would have been like, no, of course it won't feel the same. But I just hadn't. Yeah. I can't remember why. We were mucking around, a gang of us, and I was like, I'll shave your face. And it was just so mental how, like, hard you had to do it. And it was it's so rough. Like, it's so alien. Yeah, it's so alien to me, the way that feels. Very strange.
It really makes me spiral. Lots of things about the human experience weird me out. Like, I'll go into that another day.
Okay, yeah, I guess. Not going past the first scene. Oh, I've missed this. Right. We get into the real crux of the story. So we got Mark, we got Gordon. They're fixing their pretty cute looking rocket ship. The text on it said the UN Deep Space Force Group, which is fun. Because I just love that's what they think will exist, is like the UN Space Group, you know.
Also, I'm assuming if the Daleks invaded Earth 1,000 years ago, this is more or less like 1,000 years or more in the future.
Yeah, because it's the future already, I think, when, I can't remember when, I get a bit confused with the timelines with the Dalek invasion of Earth, but yeah, this is like way, way, way in the future. Yeah,
and I was like, I don't know about, I mean, this looks like we haven't advanced very much.
Yeah, the rocket is just, I've been watching a lot of Star Trek Next Generation. I'm nearly finished. It's taken me so long.
Hell yeah.
No, I'm not even going to resist this tangent. I want to go on.
Don't apologize.
Right. The episode I just watched, like, literally I watched it before I jumped on here with you. And the last series so far, I'm like maybe halfway through the last series, and it's been so consistent. You know they're pulling out all the stops for this last series. Uh-huh. There's loads of character stuff. Like, it's brilliant. But I just watched an episode where Beverly was haunted by a...
Oh my god, Seb Rosa?
Yes!
Shona, I did not finish this episode because I started reading about it and I just, like, I was not ready. I need to go back and watch it. Also, I haven't watched, like, the last 3 episodes of TNG because I wasn't, I wasn't ready. But I read about this. And the Scotland planet, the planet they made look like Scotland.
People had said to me, there's one where Beverly's like haunted by a candle. And I was like, obviously that's insane. And then I think at the start of this episode, there was like the thing with the candle. And I was a bit like, I think this is it. But I didn't know about the whole Scotland thing as well. And that really threw me.
That whole season, they're like really good or awful. And I think a lot of them are actually more awful.
Oh man.
Again, I skipped the episodes and I just read a like synopsis of it. The thing about having all the women in her family have green eyes because they were fucked by a ghost? That's a real revelation for the family.
But then, do you know what's funny at the end? I think they obviously are like, oh, we've made it a bit grim that each woman's had their like life ruined by this. So at the end, they had this line where Beverly was like, you know, I think though, everything that she went through, I think he did make her happy. And it's like, so we're all just okay with it? Like,
it's sometimes Star Trek gets so weird, like beyond cutesy weird, and I really do appreciate that.
Sure. Yeah. Mad.
I have to ask you where you're at.
Future Shona coming to you from the Time Vortex, the quite low sound quality Time Vortex today. So at this stage, me and Chloe talked for a long time about Star Trek, so I didn't keep it all in. I've kept some of it in, but still feel free to skip ahead if you want. So we talked a little bit about Data.
He felt an emotion for the first time, but it was anger and it gave him pleasure.
Oh my God. Oh my God, yes. Lore was transmitting, because Lore got the emotion chip. He was transmitting negative emotions to Data.
At some point he was like, but Counselor Troy, you told me there were no negative emotions. And she's like, ah, fuck. She's like, I know, but...
And then we talked some more about Data.
The second story. They were like, right out the gate, we were like, this android fucks. That's the energy I'm wanting from Doctor Who, you know?
That's definitely a Torchwood situation, isn't it? They must have done a story like that.
And of course, Riker had to get his honorary mention.
And he's like, give me a bone. And you're like, what? And you're like, oh, that's what he calls this trombone. Got it.
Boys, give me a bone. Star Trek is unhinged. I love it.
Anyway, back to Doctor Who.
They're trying to fix the ship, and Gordon's kind of pissed off because he's like, why did we even land here? It's dangerous here. They don't know where Jeff is. They're like, God, what's taking Jeff so long? And then he sneaks up and Mark instantly kills him on sight, and he like explains the Varga thorn.
I think he doesn't, but it like it takes a minute before he like finds the thorn. There was a lot of point, like casual point blank shooting of people in this episode.
Yeah, well,
and then people not really reacting to it.
Sure, I guess because Mark is part of the space security service.
Yes,
like, but the space Gordon FBI.
He just goes, you killed Jeff. What the fuck? You killed Jeff.
I feel like it takes him a while to get around to it. And then they're like, these only grow on Scarrow. I'm part of the space FBI. And I'm here because we think the Daleks have got some sinister plan, some dastardly plan. Oh, he literally says license to kill, though, which I thought was exciting.
He does. This is a license to kill.
When were James Bond films... When was, like, the earliest James Bond film? Probably before this, though, eh?
There was a point where they said, like, nobody would land on this planet. It's one of the most hostile planets. And that gave me pause, because I was like, aren't there planets made of sulfuric acid? Why is this the most hostile planet?
Right, yeah, like, what's so bad about it? Yeah, I guess, like, they don't really explain that.
Well, I think that the sound design gives you a clue, because the monkeys are going nuts through the whole episode.
Oh yeah, and they do say something at the start where they're like, ooh, what kind of a creature makes a sound like that?
From start to finish.
Yeah.
The monkeys are losing their minds in that jungle.
And we never see them.
You never see it. It's constant screaming. But it doesn't really seem like they have much of a problem with anything on the planet.
Yeah.
I also appreciate the economy of the fact that it's only like, this episode could be filmed in my bedroom. It's one set. Yeah. And then when they go to, like, the other side of the trees, it's absolutely the same set with the spaceship taken away.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and also, the bit with the Daleks in their place is models, I learned.
Oh, wait, were they small?
They did, whenever they did close-ups, they used big ones. So this, I learned this in my behind-the-scenes video that I watched afterwards. But when they're together, they were little models and a little model set.
With 60, we talked about this last time with 60s TV, there's just so much like dead space And that's actually something that people talk about Star Trek, like Next Generation with, is it's really calming because there's a lot of like silent shots as someone walks across the room. I was wondering when they were recreating this episode, like they must have had to figure out places to put the dead space in order to make it the right length.
I wonder if there was ever times they were like, why are we getting through this so quickly? It's something I always notice is how little cuts there are. You know, they'll stay on like one shot for a long time. And I think they kind of did that as well. It must have been fascinating, like, to make.
One shot while they're moving around, just no sound except for monkeys screaming in the background.
They were a lot. So once Mark and Gordon have gone away, that Jeff, he turns into a what I can only describe as a big fluffy.
One of the big laugh out loud moments in the episode. Out of all the things he could turn into, it's like, it's really special. And I noticed that his feet are still there, but eventually they like the when they turn into the plants, they don't have feet.
Oh, I didn't notice his feet.
I think that was a moment where you could really tell it was the modern trying to look retro because the overlay was like too clear and sharp.
It's weird, isn't it? Trying to make it look older than it is, but also not make it look unwatchable. I think it's round about now that we get a look into this kind of delegate situation where there's like a group of other aliens.
I think they see the plane or they see the ship above them first. That's another special moment where you don't see the ship. They're just looking at it. And they're like, I've never seen anything as wild as that in my whole life.
Oh, and we're like,
take your word for it.
I forgot about that. They're really selling it, aren't they? They're like, whoa. Like, if you guys could see it, you'd lose your mind.
Yes. And then, we hear the Daleks talk about something union.
Yeah, they got a bunch of other alien, a bunch of other aliens from other planets in on their destiny plan, and they all look incredible. There's like one person from each place. They all look bananas.
They're amazing. I think my favorite one was the guy with like the melty face, the little like gooey bits coming down from his face.
Yeah. He looked really cool. And you saw like a kind of close up of them preparing his face on the behind the scenes footage, which I enjoyed. Though I really liked the voice of the one. It was like it looked like they were wearing a sort of hood that was all black material, but it had like white eyes and a white mouth. And it was when they were all saying stuff, and I think it said world domination, but it was like world domination. And
a treat. I was like, I want more. I want more of this. I want to see like more of the authentic moments from the design of these. They're all good. And I love the like, again, the economy of like, it's so fun and silly and magical, but like only two of them actually have makeup on. The rest are just wearing like hoods. One has just like a white hood with a really long head, like a cone head. Yeah, that was a treat. I also, the toilet plunger on the Daleks is so funny. It was like pointing at the little board they have laid out of the galaxy that they're taking over, just like the plunger pointing to different parts.
Oh, Chloe, you need to watch some of these old Dalek episodes. They're so funny. Like in the first one, they like carry bits of paper somehow with their plunger that always but whenever they do anything with it, like I love whenever they do anything casual with it, when they like point towards something, they're just like, like gesturing with their plunger. It's so funny. And I think their gun looks rude.
Oh, yes. Me and my friend were talking about that. My friend was making this like, they were like, it looks like organic. It's like doing that. I like it. And they were making this, how would I describe this? Like you wrap your hand over your other pinched hand and you just shove it through.
I don't know how to describe it other than like Chloe's made up a hole with one hand and put the other hand through it. and it looks obscene. It's way worse when it's a close-up, but there wasn't even a close-up of the gun in this one. And even when it fired, I was like, ooh.
It was a close-up.
Was there?
Close-ish.
Oh.
Yeah, when they kill, what's the main dude's name?
Mark Corey.
Mark Corey. They kill Marcus. Love that. There's not even like flashing to show the bullets. It's just like it shoots and then you wait a minute, like you wait a couple seconds after it shoots and then everything turns negative.
Yeah.
Like it made me think of, have you seen the new Spielberg movie?
The one that's about Spielberg?
Yeah.
I haven't Fable. Seen it.
So there's a part in it where they show like when he was making like Western movies with his friends as a teenager.
Right.
He couldn't figure out like how to make the gunshots look real because it was just people pointing guns and people falling down. And then what he did was he would poke holes in the film where the gun was. So then everything would like flash.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I was thinking like, well, I would think that that would be a better way for them to do this in the 60s. Is that what they just do in the real ones where they, when the Daleks shoot, they just make it all go negative?
In the other Dalek episodes. Yeah. So I thought it was cool that they still did that, you know. I guess it's kind of like in Modern Who, how they go like an X-ray and you can see there's like the victim goes like an X-ray and you can see their skeleton before they die.
I haven't watched Doctor Who other than these in so long, but as soon as the new series with Shuri Gawa comes out, get ready. I'm a watching.
I'm dead excited. I just watched Russell T Davis's ITV three-parter Nolly as well.
He's done. I don't know how he's like doing so much and still. I want, like, he's at the point where he's producing so much stuff that I wonder about the quality of it. Like, please. We don't want him to go into Ryan Murphy territory.
What are all the things that Ryan Murphy made?
Oh my he's God. Like,
is Ryan Murphy everything. The Glee guy?
He's the Glee guy. So like all the American Horror Stories, I think also the American Crime Stories.
Oh, right.
Betty, the feud, Betty versus Joan. He just makes, like, it's constantly that like old Hollywood one on Netflix. Like every, it's just constant. He's just pumping the money. They're not great. Like they feel like they've been pumped out, a lot of them.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, I hope that doesn't happen also. I'd like to hope especially that Doctor Who is kind of his baby and it would still be great.
Yeah.
Oh, I really need to watch, I think I'm going to try and watch Sex Education before it comes out as well, because I haven't really seen it.
Yeah. It's a delight. And I think it becomes more of a delight as like it goes on. It is funny in that I think it portrays teenagers as having way more sex than they do in real life. But then there's also that issue of like, is that just colored by my own personal experience as a teenager?
But that's kind of what teenagers want to watch as well, right? Because I mean, that was like, I remember Skins was a bit like that. And I was like, oh, this is funny that, because the appeal of Skins as well was that they had teenage writers as well, right? And you were like, this is funny because this is what teenagers... Yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? Interestingly, one of those writers was Daniel Kaluuya.
Yes, I only found out about that recently too. I used to think that Skins was like that because I get like, I don't know, adults just going wild writing about teenagers, but maybe it actually makes more sense. The teenagers are writing about teenagers.
Well, I think there was a bit of that going on. I think I watched some interviews with some of the actors from that, and I think there was like a bit of like disregard for like those kids' safety as well. Yeah,
no, it's fucking nuts. I always think about, because now that Euphoria is a thing, I haven't watched it, but in my head I'm like, Euphoria is the American answer to Skins. It sounds similarly just balls to the wall wild. I have to say, like the episode, whenever I think of Skins being just unfettered, I think of the episode where somebody, because there's Nicholas Holt's character and then his sister Effie, and there's an episode where someone who wants revenge on Nicholas Holt takes him to a warehouse and tries to force him to have sex with his sister.
Oh my god, that does happen. Yeah,
that's the peak for me of wildness.
Because I think when I watched Skins when it was, you know, when it was airing, and the episodes or the stories I find more appealing were the ones that are maybe like a bit more grounded. Like they could still be kind of I think they could still be crazy and seem cool. Like that was still, like, I think, like, especially when I was maybe like a young teenager watching it, and it was like, oh, you know, these people are living a way cooler life than me. I don't know if I just grew out of it. If maybe it was because I was older when like the other series started coming out. But then there was such crazy stuff, like murders. You know.
I know. What's his name? He was in Game of Thrones now, but he's like the wild one, and then he's like having some sort of episode. He's like, get my pills, because he does drugs a lot, and the girlfriend assumes he's Chris. Asking for drugs. He's like, no, I have a terrible illness, and then he dies.
Yeah, he dies in the first. You're like, okay, he's gone. But yeah, there was stuff like that. When Peter Capaldi played someone's dad in the first series and he died, he played Sid's dad, and that was really moving. And I found Chris dying, like finding it kind of moving, whereas like in the series after, it was like someone got killed by a baseball bat from like some psychopath. And I was like, huh?
I fell off of Skins in like, I don't know if they had more series after this, but I fell off where there was a series with like a girl who was super kind of cool, and she like slicked her hair back and she wore like awesome like brothel creeper shoes, and then she had no friends, and then as she started to make the friends, her look softened and became more feminine, and that is my least favorite trope. It feels like such a betrayal. Like that one felt like more gendery, but it's like it feels like the same as the like trope of the goth girl becomes less goth once she like becomes more happy.
Oh. Well, they do that to a male character in that same series. But I think the thing with that character, the one you were talking about, I think that was a proper thing, because I think this is, you know how I was like, I saw some interviews with the actors and they think they kind of got like not treated well by the adults and that. It was her, and she was saying like in the second series they made her like just really feminine and sexy and stuff, and it was really grim. They had them all like kind of having to like parade around in these bikinis and stuff, and her character wasn't going to wear that. Her character was going to wear something way more kind of conservative, because that's what their character was like. And apparently the guy that was the showrunner by that point, that was not the showrunner that it began with, was like, oh, I'm bored, make it sexier or something really grim, like something shit, like
teenagers. I just remember feeling like I was so excited for her when it started. I felt so represented by this character. And then as soon as she like stops slicking her hair back and it's just all like curly, I was like, fuck this.
Bullshit, yeah. Fuck, I know, I've never seen a character that was kind of in any way gender fluid in that way on TV before, like not at all. And there's this great bit where they ask her if she likes girls or boys, and she's like, oh, I'm interested in people. And it's like, God, I've never heard someone like close to my age say that on TV. That's crazy. And then, you know, in the next series, they put her in a fucking bikini and just made her like anybody. It's just dumb. Trash.
Trash.
Okay, so what's going on with Mark and Gordon?
They're trying to fix the ship or something. They're trying to do...
Yeah, they're trying to send a message. They're like, we're not going to be able to fix the ship. We don't have time. So we have to send a message on this little rocket.
Meanwhile, the plants are like... slowly coming closer, but like we don't see them move. They're just, when we see them, they're just like shimmying.
Yeah, shimmying.
There's something very ominous about the plants just being there, knowing they're coming closer so slowly. Mm. Also, they're not really reacting to the plants in a realistic way. They're very like chill about it. They're like, oh, those are too close for comfort. But like, so I think as a viewer, I don't know, I found like as a viewer, it was weirdly effective. It was like, it did build tension.
I didn't notice until they were kind of everywhere. Or I was like Mark and Gordon. I didn't, because I think the Daleks were sort of hunting them down at that point. And then at some point I was like, oh shit, there's plants everywhere. And that was kind of cool.
Yeah. Well, they're trying to, the Daleks chasing them or trying to get them. And in their fight with the Daleks, Gordon gets poked.
He tries to suck out the poison, but Gordon, it's too late.
Too late. Also, if you suck out the poison's still going in your mouth.
Well, he was trying to spit it out.
That's true. I'm a scientist.
It's one of those things. At first, I was like, this looks dumb. But then I remember thinking, I'd probably try it. I'd be like, I don't want to be poisoned.
And he does the classic thing of not telling the other guy. But like, to be fair, he knows the other guy will just shoot him immediately. which he does eventually.
Well, yeah, he's like, I've seen it before. I've seen it happen.
He has no qualms shooting.
No, he's SSS. He knows what needs to. He's got a license to kill.
Like with these production values, just watching somebody shoot somebody point blank like that is not disturbing. But like they'd never have that in modern Who and not have it be a big deal.
Yeah, of course. And do you know what? This is a really good point because I've often thought this about classic episodes. Sometimes the brutality is full on, man. Like people get stabbed and people get shot. But I think because you can't really see it very well, because this is like, this would have been on at like 5:30 or something. Like, one of the ones I just watched had Barbara, like, she was on the run because this guy was going to capture her and make her a slave. And then she hid in this guy's house and he was worried that people were going to find his daughter. And he left Barbara a knife and he said, if they find you, kill my daughter and yourself.
I think that's what makes the show effective, is that like the drama is good in places, but it's also funny that this was like largely a show that kids watched.
Yeah, pretty mad. The shooting is a bit shocking, like it's pretty sudden. And yeah, and when he died, it didn't look that hammy. Like it didn't look like that theatrical, honestly, like as I think maybe an actual classic episode would. It kind of did look like he just got shot full on. Though I did think that the way they did his hand, his infected hand, looked really good. Because normally you can't really see, because it's all...
You see the infected hand also with the first guy, right? When like...
Oh yeah, I think you do, yeah.
He's dead, and then it's sort of like you see his hand move, and the music goes, woo! There was a lot of... cues in this episode where it zooms in on something and the music goes, ah!
God, you've really got me thinking if that's old music or new music. I really want to find out.
I don't know, like whether they would have had the tapes for the music.
But is that the kind of thing they would have on record that they wouldn't lose? Maybe the music, because the Radiophonic Workshop, maybe they would have all that archived. I don't know.
There doesn't seem to be a lot of rhyme and reason for why certain episodes weren't lost.
I don't really know either. When
like
whenever
they were just
I
I need some tape, and they grabbed a random tape out of the shelf. Did they like check the ratings or something for that episode? And if it had lower ratings, they were like, oh, they won't miss that one.
Yeah, exactly. Why that episode? That's what I'm wondering. I did notice that there happened to be a couple that are a bit like racially ambiguous. Like there seemed to be. I think there were just a few episodes that I watched in a row that were missing. And I only had like stills and audio for them. And they seemed to be things like Marco Polo, that had a lot of white people playing Asian characters, or The Crusades, which had a lot of Middle Eastern characters played by white people. And I was like, but I don't think there's a grand conspiracy or anything.
Are
so
the Daleks, they're ready to kill him.
Oh yeah. So Mark, the Daleks destroy their rocket as well. So I guess by this stage, Mark kind of knows that he's not going to get off the ship or whatever. But he keeps recording on his recorder, which looks like a big cassette.
A VHS, really.
Yeah, which is hilarious because I'm sort of, I presume they knew what that prop looked like, because this absolutely reeks of 60s wondering what future would look like.
Is the recorder like broadcasting somewhere?
This is my question, because at the end, obviously, Mark...
The Daleks win.
Yeah, the Daleks shoot him, but they make a big point of showing that the recorder is unscathed.
Okay, well, here's my question. I was like, I assume the next episode is the Doctor preventing, like, this Dalek takeover. Is it that, or is it just not?
No, that's the weird thing. The story that I understand this to be the prequel of is the Dalek Master Plan. But the story after this is the Mythmakers, and I don't know anything about that really. And then it's the Dalek Master Plan. So I don't know if they were just like, we'll set this up for when we get to the Dalek Master Plan.
They do continue the story into the Dalek Master Plan.
I think so.
Have you watched it yet?
No, I haven't yet.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's the one that's really long.
I wonder if all the like aliens are, all the different aliens are in that.
Yeah, they're going to come back. Do you know the guy that speaks most out of that group of aliens?
Mm-hmm.
my first suspicion about this actor was, I was like, I bet that's one of the staff. I just know that that's one of the staff. God.
Well, I did find that he, you know, the question of like, is this bad on purpose or is it, he seemed to be really walking the line between that.
Yeah. Or is he leaning into the hamminess of the 60s? I don't know. He also had like such a thick Northern accent, which I really enjoyed. Or yeah, maybe it just seemed thick next to the RP-ness of the other guys. Yeah, they were a delight, those group of aliens, just that they all looked different and they all had silly voices and
You know what I'd like to see? The 60s version, if they you know the character Cassandra, who's just like the skin?
Yeah.
If that had been a character in the 60s version, like how they would have done that? Like, I feel like they would have put just a woman behind the canvas.
Yeah.
But like her little face would have sticked through. That would have been fun.
Yeah, they would have like just put a little hole in it, like those things you get like on a pier, like at the seaside, where you put this big dastardly plan is that they're going to conquer the solar system, and they name some of the planets. I find that fun. They were like Mars, Venus, Jupiter, the moon colonies, and they're like whoa, but first Earth.
Of course. My friend was really sad they didn't name Uranus.
Cowards.
It is weird as an ending when you're not planning to watch I might watch what this sets up, but I'm just like,
it's so long though, Chloe. It's so long. It's like it's so many episodes, and some of them are missing as well. Yeah, I think I'm gonna get my friend Caroline over too, and I think we're gonna watch it all together, and then we're gonna podcast about it afterwards and make it like a massive sort of punishing day.
How many episodes is it?
I think it's like 12 or something. I can't remember how many. It's over 10 though.
Is it the whole rest of the season?
No. Not even. God. It's so weird. Okay. I don't know how it all works.
So British TV didn't used to just be 6 episodes a series. It used to be like, you get 90.
But then I don't know how, if they really broke it up into series the same way as you do now, because there's some, for example, that are the finale of a season that I'm like, what? Like one I just watched was a missing episode, and it was technically the finale of series one, and it's Reign of Terror, and it's 4 episodes, and it's about the French Revolution, and it's fairly dry, and I was just like, this is the end of the first series of Doctor Who ever? Like this?
I would have assumed that you were like on at least series 4 by now.
I am so slow though, and I took so much time off, like when I was doing Peter Pan over summer, I was like, I'll definitely podcast over there, and I did not. So that's probably my fault. But also it's long as well.
Yeah, I guess it is the television serial. There wasn't really like a structure then. They were just like,
have this.
I wonder, like, did they take breaks? Did they take a regular break?
Interestingly, it's funny you mentioned that, because the reason there's no main players, and like the reason this is like an isolated episode in terms of there's none of the main cast in it, it was apparently to give them all a week's holiday. They would record it. They would record it, and they did the same with this. They would rehearse, like Monday to Thursday, and then they'd record it on the Friday, and that was how they filmed it. And I think they did the same thing with this as well, which is pretty cool. The making of is really nice. It was like 10 minutes long, and it was a lovely watch. So the guy that originally played Mark Corey went along to see them film it. And Peter Purvis, who plays Stephen, that I don't think you'll have met.
The name. Peter Purvis?
Peter Purvis is the actor's name, and he plays Stephen Taylor. Stephen, you won't have met Stephen, but he first comes in the chase, actually.
Okay.
They rescue him, and he's gone insane. He's gone a bit insane because he's been a prisoner for so long, and his only companion is this little stuffed toy panda called Hi-Fi.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing.
And then it's him and Vicky. You'll remember Vicky from, you know how they get Vicky in the rescue?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then, so it's him and Vicky that are traveling with the doctor right now. Well, you know, when I'm watching it. But yeah, there. I also noticed in the making of, there was like a special thanks for Jodie Whittaker and Mandip Gill. I wonder what they had to do with it. Maybe they were just around.
I enjoyed this.
Yeah, I thought this was fun too. It's the most fun about it is that it's a recreation from just 2019. Like, that's the most exciting thing about it. But I've watched a lot of missing episodes recently, so I'm already like, okay, it's missing. So I was just, okay. It was so nice not to just have like stills and audio and for it to be able to just watch it like a cohesive episode. Yeah.
Nice. I'd like to give a shout out to the guy playing Mark. I think he's very good.
I thought he was really good as well. There was a really sweet bit where the actor that played him, you know, in the 60s was like, and I looked up and there was me, but a lot more handsome than I was back then.
He was hot. I was like, Mark, nice to look at.
License to Kill.
That's funny. Did they find actors who looked similar to the original actors?
Not a clue. Yeah, no. I don't know. I suppose it'd be easy to tell if you go on like a still, if you look at the stills from before.
Is there stills? Okay, I'm going to look at that.
Yeah, I might look at the stills as well. See, yeah, I might see what's available as well, just out of curiosity. He did say, the guy that played him before, he said that the set and everything like looked just the same, and that he's like, I remembered it a bit, but then it all came flooding back, you know, and that was pretty cool. I think this is just this, even the ones that have like, yeah, this is a good one to recreate because it doesn't have the Doctor or anyone recognizable in it, right? And I think the guy that like runs this, I guess, drama program or whatever at the uni, he was saying, oh, I've had this, because I think they often do like a big project there. And he was like, this has been in my head for like 5 years. I thought this would be a cool thing to do. But have you got any final thoughts on this? Anything that you haven't said that you want to say?
I think I've said it all.
I've said it all too. Is there anything you want to plug or anything? I know you're like taking a breather in life right now, but
you can still find the 5 episodes of my podcast, Enthusiastic, with Chloe Huberto on Spotify. I'm hoping, I think I literally said this the last time I was on, it will be revived at some point. Who knows when that will be. I've been doing a lot more textile work and embroidery. So if you want to hit up my Instagram, ChloeH_, I have some of that. And like, I'm always open to commissions. I do pet portraits, that sort of thing. More complicated if you're in the UK with like extra shipping and stuff. But yeah, then I'll probably just post, you know, whatever I'm getting up to on there.
Cool. Right. That's us for this time. That was My Adventure in Space and Time. And we've been Shona and Chloe. Bye!
My Adventure in Space and Time is hosted and produced by Shona Stevenson, with music by Shona Stevenson and artwork by Robbie Stevenson. Special thanks to Caroline Donald for all her support and to anyone listening. You can hear more on the website at myadventureinspace.wixsite.com/podcast or on Spotify, Apple Podcasts and Stitcher. Please join the conversation on Facebook, Twitter or Instagram at myadventurepod. Thanks for coming along on the adventure.
Before I go, I just want to tell you, you were fantastic. Absolutely fantastic.